everybody. Another dominant performance, another successive victory in the Premiership, and for 24 hours at least, sail the top of the league as the Sharks hit London Irish for 6 on Friday night, 39 points to nil. My name is Lewis, welcome back inside the Shark Tank, and joining me to discuss that win and more are my co-hosts Alex and James. Alex, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. Watching us win 39-0 on Friday night has put me in a good mood for the weekend, so what more can you want? How are you?
Very well. Obviously, a slightly strange game on Friday, given that it wasn't on TV, so I was having to watch it on a slightly dodgy stream. But from what I saw, Sale looked pretty good for all of it. And obviously, like you said, it bleeds quite neatly into a very nice weekend. And speaking of bleeding, James, how are you?
Well, we were just talking to listeners. I've been suffering from a nosebleed overnight, and I do wonder if it's directly correlated with the further up the table we go. Maybe there's something to do with altitude in there, but it's absolutely just fab, isn't it? Being Sale fans, being second in the table, going into the next round of games after the Premiership Cup is over. It really is fantastic, and it does feel like we are now back and we can talk about that confidently.
I love it. You're so not used to Sale being at the dizzying heights of the top of the Premiership that you're starting to suffer from nosebleeds. Unbelievable. Alex, you were there on Friday night, so let's kind of start there. I mean, you know, you look at the scoreboard, 39 points to nil, 6 tries to nothing. You know, looks like, you know, from a casual observer's point of view, a pretty dominant performance for Sale. But did that reflect what you saw in the stands on Friday night?
Yeah, I think it did over the course of the game. We were by far the better side. I think what you saw was, and I think a lot of people sort of underestimate London Irish, just because they're London Irish, so they go, oh, it'll be fine. But you look, they've got a really good side now. They had Sean O'Brien back, Frank van der Meer in the second row. They've got internationals throughout the team. So they've got a really solid side, and their defence was excellent, especially in the first half. We really struggled to break them down. So, you know, we were dominating, but we couldn't make metres. And, you know, we'd sort of go side to side and we'd play some nice stuff, but we never actually broke the gain line that well. And then Irish would win a turnover or, you know, we'd make a mistake. So, you know, they were playing an excellent defensive game. They just offered nothing in attack from what I could see. Every time they had the ball, it was a box kick out back to us to try and get up the field. And it was only sort of the very end of the first half where they started to show a bit of ambition. And then, you know, in the last play of the first half, we get that breakaway try, which I think was a big moment in the game to get that, because then it meant we were coming out for the second half and we played, you know, we sort of grew into the game. As they tired out, more spaces appeared and we started to, I think our quality started to show at that point. So I think it was a really professional performance in, you know, that we hung on in there in the first half. Our defence was excellent, so they never looked like scoring a try, really. And then our attack sort of held in. And then in the second half, when we tied them out after, you know, battering down the door for 40 minutes, the floodgates almost opened at that point. And I think, you know, 12-0 in the first half is probably a little bit harsh on London Irish, who actually played quite well. But it's sort of credit to us that we managed to keep them to nil over the whole game, because then in the second half, we looked by far the better team. So, yeah, I think it was dominant, but it was not like, you know, from the first minute dominant. It was a real fight, and I think it's a real credit to sort of the mentality of the squad that they were able to look like a sort of a Saracens Exeter team where they, you know, they hold you in, they keep you at arm's length, and then in the second half, they blow you away. And I said so many times, we've gone down to Exeter and got battered, and actually we haven't played that badly, but they've just run away with it in the second half. And that's exactly what we did, so it's quite encouraging to see that from our point of view, I think.
Yeah, I know. So when we were discussing the game on our sort of internal comms on Friday night straight afterwards, we all sort of described it as a professional performance. It did really feel like that. We soaked up a lot of pressure in the first half. You know, we controlled possession, we controlled territory. We've got some stats on that later on. And it did feel like you said, Alex, when the floodgates started to open in the second half, it was because basically we'd worn Irish down and those opportunities started to present themselves. But James, from your perspective then, you know, Sale scored 6 tries, you know, they didn't concede a single point. It's a really, really strong performance. But from your perspective, what's the most pleasing aspect of this win for Sale? Is it the fact that we were able to play a full 80-minute game and score the tries only when the opportunities came to us? Or is it the fact that, you know, once again, we have conceded basically nothing on the scoreboard to a team that is ostensibly in a top 6 push?
Yeah, I think the two things are linked, though. I don't think it's the fact that you know, we're either scoring tries and that's most pleasing, or our defence is really good. I think we're scoring tries because our defence is good. If you have a look at most of the most of the Sale tries, especially this time, but look over the course of the whole season, how many of them are coming from interceptions or through an opposition mistake where the ball goes to ground and we're first on it? You know, you look at the Luke James try, that came about because of a mistake in midfield. And, you know, I think a lot of our tries have been like that all year, really. And at the beginning of the season, we were like, why can't we score our own tries? Why do we have to rely on the opposition cocking up, or Denny or McGuigan or whatever intercepting on a kind of like, you know, all or nothing attempt to catch the ball, you know, to stop a try, and then we score a try? And at the beginning of the season, it felt like that could be a real issue and maybe our attack's not as good. But now you realise that actually Exeter and Saracens, that's exactly how they play. You know, they keep the ball in the air. They chase things really well. They invite oppositions to attack, because if your defence is as aggressive as theirs is, and now ours is, oppositions make mistakes. And then we've got the pace and we've got the ball skills and we've got the finishing ability to really, really punish it.
I wanted to pull up a stat from the last three games: Sale against Gloucester away, London Irish at home, obviously, and Leicester at home. Sale have conceded 20 points. So 20 points in three games, which is an unbelievable stat, you know, especially given how competitive the Premiership is this year. But one of the things I noticed when we were playing London Irish on Friday was the way Sale's defence is set up is we have, you know, a very sort of flat line, you know, rugby league style. Much has been made of Mike Forshaw, obviously being the defence coach. We play sort of a flat defensive line that rushes up and blitzes the opponents. And what that forces them to do is pass the ball wide. And we put a lot of faith in our centres and our wingers to basically produce the right read. We say to them, when the ball's coming out to the wingers, you have to either be aggressive and try and force a mistake or force a knock-on, or you have to sit back and, you know, soak up the pressure and then wait until the cover defence comes across. And we've sort of played that style for a couple of seasons now, and we've seen it work sometimes. We've seen it work, you know, not great other times. I know Northampton last season completely tore us apart because they knew exactly how to break that down. But I want to, equate a large reason why London Irish scored 0 points on Friday because of just how good our defence is and how good our defence has become. Because we've still, you know, we scored 6 tries on Friday, but we still kind of struggle to score from something that isn't first phase ball. But what we're doing now and what came to a peak on Friday was that aggressive defence forcing teams into making mistakes and obviously scoring tries off the back of it. And the Sam James try in the first half is a perfect example of that. So, you know, the ball goes wide, it's a great read for him to jump out to line and intercept. You know, same in the second half with Sam James' other try, again forcing a mistake, and it's an easy running. And then Luke James obviously forcing a mistake in the midfield because of our line speed in the middle. And then obviously we, like you said, James, we have the ball skills to turn over. So I think a massive, massive part of why we've become such a dominant team in a lot of senses, and the reason why we're now second and briefly first in the table, is because our defence has basically been perfected in how we want to play, and you have everybody buying in. And because of that, Alex, I want to ask you, sort of, we're going to, I mean, 39 points to nil, 6 tries, etc. There's not loads to talk about because we were just a better team and we rightly, you know, produced a bonus point win. So I want to sort of look at individuals and, you know, going off what we just said about how Sale's defence is basically leading to attacking opportunities and scoring tries, is there anyone that really stands out for you as being the sort of focal point of Sale's recent increase in form?
I think Rob De Bruyne plays a massive part in it, and we've kind of said that on the pod for the last few weeks, haven't we? But, you know, teams can't run at him and expect to get anywhere. And then in attack, he just sort of moves the chains pretty quickly, and we're seeing that, you know, we're turning it over. I think Ben Curry's a massive part of it. I think there were times on Friday night where Irish got up a little bit ahead of steam, and Ben was just putting in a turnover, completely stopped their momentum, won us the penalty, and got us back up the field. So, I think I've said many times that he should be in contention for England. I don't understand why he isn't. But, you know, for us, it's brilliant. It's a massive shame for him that it seems to still not be happening. But I think he's playing some of the best rugby I've seen him play for a long time. Obviously, Jono Ross is huge defensively, and that sort of leadership element, I think, is massive and keeps the team going and puts put in a few really big hits on Friday night that just knocked Irish backwards. And it's those sort of little momentum shifters where, you know, you knock them backwards and the crowd gets up. I think it's huge. There's a couple of others, but I don't want to take them all, so I'll leave it to you. But I think there's another set of twins who might come into the conversation if I hand over to you.
Well, yeah, obviously a massive part of why Sale was so dominant up front and have been for in a lot of games this year is obviously the play of Dan and Jean-Luc Dupria. James, one of the things, I'm going to let you talk about this because I know you've had an evolving stance on how the Dupria brothers have played a part in Sale's success this season. But one of the things that I noticed from Friday night is not only were they defensive area responsible, making the tackles, but actually we started to see them really stretch their legs and make some clean breaks and attack the space rather than just putting people on their arses, you know, and making a 2 meter gain. It does really feel that as our defensive structure and as our attacking structure really continues to be honed, both the Dupria brothers, we're now starting to see some of that summer rugby style of play where they're at their most destructive. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, but I just think it's credit to them that they've learned other ways of playing where the weather's been not so good and they're adjusting to English conditions. And I think that, you know, they've really shown that they can carry the ball tight. They're making much better decisions about when to offload, when to not. I wonder whether Lou Diaga's return is really going to free up the likes of Jean-Luc especially, you know, because Lou's going to be willing to do these carries closer to the ruck, and we're going to be able to put the Duprias maybe a little bit further out. They won't be able to, you know, won't be needed to take on the heavy load quite so much. But I like the way I think we've got a really good balance now. You know, not every sort of half break has to be a money shot offload. You know, the whole point is that it gets you over the gain line if you recycle the ball quick, and that's what's been going really well for us. Is, you know, Cliff's been arriving to the ruck, and it's just been bump, the ball's gone. And that's why Rob Dupria has been able to come into his own, because he's running forwards with a retreating defence. And then it just becomes about the decision-making of the 10. And, you know, we know that Rob Dupria is a bit of a confidence player. His confidence is up at the moment, and he's making the right decisions. And we saw him with ball in hand breaking the line as well this time and showing some good pace. And I think it just bodes really, really well for the team that, you know, everything's going so well. Hopefully he can keep it going, both with kicking at goal and playing. But all the Duprias, you know, what fab signings. And I think at the beginning of the year, and actually for most of the year, I think Dan Dupria has been, along with Bryn Evans and Rob Webber, by far our most consistent player. And to have that, you know, at two and at lock and at eight, and then you consider the form of his life that Will Cliff has been in, you know, and you suddenly think, in all these decision-making positions, we've got some really solid players that are just really consistent week in, week out. They're not, you know, they're not these kind of players that, you know, have like man of the match appearances one game and then, you know, none the next. And we've just got a level of consistency, which has really, really helped us. And I just wanted to pick out Webber and Evans because I think that, you know, with the injuries that we had at the time that we had them, you know, that they really picked up their consistency in what is probably their final year, and we owe them a debt of gratitude. And just to finish on Jean-Luc, I think he deserves the most credit of all, because I was criticising the club for not bringing anybody in at second row or playing Dan Dupria at second row because he's the bigger of the two. But Jean-Luc has really knuckled down for the team. He's become a good line-out man. He's doing a lot of the donkey work, and he's shown a huge level of fitness because, you know, we've carried in the last couple of weeks two second rows on the bench, moving Jean-Luc out to the back row for the last 20 minutes. So, you know, it takes a lot out of your legs playing second row and scrummaging, especially if you haven't done much of it. But then to move to the back row and still be as destructive as he was, making line breaks and stuff, absolutely phenomenal. Dimes has had an absolute storm assigning the three Duprias.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan Dupria, 18 appearances for Sale all season. I need to double check how that compares with the rest of the squad. But I mean, like you said, James, it's a really good point. We have consistency in a lot of key decision-making positions. And it's definitely an area where we struggled last year because we were playing Jean-Luc Dupria there sometimes when he was on loan. We were playing John O'Ross. You know, we really sort of, you know, chopped and changed there. And actually having a consistent number eight has been a massive part of the reason why our scrum's working really well. That link play between 8, 9 and 10 is working really well. And then obviously that's given us momentum in key parts of the field to obviously go on and produce winning performances. And you're absolutely right on Rob Dupree. A bit of a, you know, we've said that he's a bit of a confidence player, but you look at Luke James's try that scored, you know, just you know, at the death of the first half to, you know, really put the knife into London Irish. That try definitely doesn't happen without that lovely show and go from Rob Dupree, you know, in two hands, you know, fakes the pass, and then he basically has 50 meters made unopposed because he's sent, you know, he sent the covering defender for a pint of milk, and it's little plays like that in the course of the game where if we're not playing well and we don't have that level of confidence, you know, maybe we actually you know, miss that opportunity, and all of a sudden we go in at the break only 7-0 up, and it's a completely different game. But there is. And Alex, you know, I kind of want you to input on this as well. But you know, there does feel like there's a massive like uplift in confidence throughout the entire team at the moment, and we kind of feel like we've had the, you know, the shackles taken off slightly to play this expansive game that we know we can play, and it kind of feels like it's now all coming to the fore at the perfect time of the season, and that's why we're beating good teams like London Irish 39-0.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just the accuracy. You can see that the confidence sort of comes, and we're, you know, I think we've been trying the passes all season. I think it's the sticking now, and we're, you know, we're used to. You can see it's a team that's used to playing with each other. You know, people know where people are going to throw the ball, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of anticipation in it, and then when we're doing it, we're executing it really accurately, and that comes from confidence, doesn't it? You know, if you get a pass that's not quite right, you still take it because you're playing well, and you know you're in a really good place as a club. So, yeah, I completely agree. I think you can see that confidence, and you can sort of, you know, as I say, I think the Dupreeers have been trying those offloads all season, but they're just, you know, everyone else is sort of getting on their wavelength now. And, you know, you can see in that Luke James try, the way we keep the ball moving from the minute we get it to the moment Luke scores the try. It's, you know, Bryn Evans takes it, Cliff's straight on the shoulder, Curry's on the shoulder anticipating, and actually it's a really good bit of play by Will Cliff not to give it to Ben Curry initially, but to then give it afterwards around the corner, and then Curry to take it down, not try the offload when it wasn't on, and pop it up to Cliff again, and just keeping the game moving. And you can see, you know, it's a team that, as you say, the consistency in those key positions means that everyone's on, it looks like everyone's on the same wavelength and playing some fantastic stuff when really it's very simple rugby, that, isn't it? You know, it's just pass and move and pass and move. Draw the defender, you know, and it, but it looks brilliant. It's a length of the field try. So I think, you know, what we can see, and it's quite nice to see as well when Faf came back in, you know, he's on McGuigan's wavelength for that kick across to him, which is a great bit of skill, and a great finish by Byron. You know, it's just, it seems like the whole team are training well and playing well. And when we're on match days, we're just cutting out those errors that I, you know, we've always said on this pod, we're 5% away from being a really good team, aren't we? You know, we can go toe-to-toe with the big teams, but we sometimes just lose it a bit. And, you know, we haven't quite got that accuracy and that finishing ability. And we've developed it. I think you can see that, you know, we've got the defence now and we're developing this accuracy in attack that's just killing teams. And that's why we're putting 40 points on a really good defence. You know, I think you can't take enough away from that. It won't be mentioned in the press because it wasn't on telly, so no one's really seen it. But London Irish were an excellent defensive side, and, you know, they've beaten good teams home and away. So, you know, to beat them 39-0, not even give them a sniff, is fantastic. And you could see that they didn't want to play against us because they were kicking the ball away every chance they got. So, you know, just brilliant. That confidence then sort of translates to the opposition, because the opposition don't want to come to AJ Bell and play Sale because we're in probably the form of the last 20 years. You know, it's brilliant, and it's really encouraging for coming into, you know, the portion of the season where historically we're quite good at the end of the season. You know, we start slowly and then we pick it up, and hopefully we're going into a period where we can continue that confidence. And if we keep playing like this, then we are going to end up in the top four. It's really, really exciting as a Sale fan, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think from my perspective, at least, as someone who watches every single Sale game, you know, every season, I think it's the manner in which we're scoring these tries as well, because you made some really good points, Alex, about accuracy and passes going to hand and playing with confidence. But I suppose, you know, you went down the list from Friday. Two tries for Sam James, both of them came off mistakes from Irish. You know, that goes back to the defence we've already spoken about. Luke James, again, a mistake from Irish in attack, and obviously we did a fantastic job of putting the phases together to score that. Rob Webber try on 63 minutes, you know, that comes from, you know, a rolling maul. Denny Solomona, 74 minutes, has taken advantage of a tired defence. And obviously, great finish as well from Solomona. Great to see him back on the score sheet as well. And obviously, Byron McGuigan, as you've already mentioned, right at the end of the game, shot to nothing from De Klerk. But we've battered Irish up front. We've created the gaps out wide, and it's you know, a bit of world class skill from De Klerk to fire the kick over, and ultimately a relatively simple try for McGuigan. And being able to beat teams in a variety of ways is one of the reasons why A, we're winning games, and B, you know, we're winning them by such healthy margins as well. James, I mentioned De Klerk there as a big part of Sale's final try on the night. Obviously, you're probably number one. You're probably the number one member of the Willcliffe fan club, and obviously he's been in, as you said, the form of his life. How did you sort of interpret De Klerk's return on Friday night? You know, how do you think he you know, compared to the form that we're kind of seeing from Cliff? And do you think, you know, moving forward, we're going to start to see the minute shift back towards De Klerk, or do you think Friday night was indicative of how the two can really work in tandem together moving forward?
Well, I've always said that we should be using Willcliffe more intelligently than we did do, say, last year. But I'll qualify that very, very clearly by saying it's quite clear that De Klerk is in a different league as a rugby player. He can do things that Willcliffe can only dream of. What Will Chris brought to his game is he's at his peak of his powers. You know, he's sort of 31. He's got a lot of experience now. He's a club man through and through, and he's reached a level of consistency where, you know, he's sort of putting in performances of 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 every single week, whereas before it was more sort of 6s and 7s, perhaps. De Klerk can be a 10 out of 10, can't he? And he can win you a game. I mean, the Crossfield kick's a great example. So I do see us moving quite significantly to shifting towards De Klerk minutes-wise. I don't think it will start this week in the Premiership Cup final because he hasn't really played any of the competition, I don't think, or much of it at least. And therefore, I don't think it would be right for him to be starting the game. But other than that, you know, he should be raring to go. He's not played for a little while. He's had an enforced rest with injury, and expect him to play most of the minutes through to the end of the season. And it's fab to see him back. And that last try just reminded everybody in the stadium what a special world-class player he is.
Absolutely. And whilst we're discussing returning Springbok World Cup winners, I think it'd be remiss not to mention, obviously, the Sale debut of Lou Diaga, who made his Premiership bow coming on at the same time as De Klerk midway through that second half. Alex, you were in the stadium. What was the uplift like when Diaga was announced as coming on and making his debut for Sale? Because from what I was able to see, it sounded like it was a real roar of anticipation and expectation from the Sale faithful.
Yeah, it was. It was a proper... It was the sort of atmosphere I've only ever really heard at, like, a football match. And, you know, it's not... I know it's a weird thing to say, but it was a proper, you know, the whole stadium was roaring and cheering and excited. And, you know, it felt like it was a bit of a... I didn't expect it, really, when it happened. I thought it'd be a big cheer, but it was, you know, probably one of the biggest noises I've heard at the AJ Bell. It was brilliant. I think, you know, the anticipation was there all game. You know, people chanting his name when he was warming up. And, you know, you could see as soon as he came on as well the absolute quality. But it was just the excitement every time he got the ball. It's like when Marlon Yard gets the ball. There's just this massive rush and cheer and everyone's excited to see what happens. And you get in there in the second row. It's brilliant. So, you know, it was absolutely fantastic. One of the best things I've experienced at the AJ Bell. You know, I probably equate it to when Marlon scored that last-minute winning try against Wasps in terms of just the feeling around the stadium. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough of the AJ Bell crowd for that. So it's just, you know, and I think, you know, we'll see that every game because it's almost been teased, hasn't it? You know, it's been a long wait, and I think it's just going to be exciting every time he plays because he's an absolutely brilliant player. You could see that as soon as he came on, commanded the line out, carrying was excellent. And bringing him on with Faf as well was just, you know, it cherry on the cake. It was a great bit of almost PR substitution from the club, I think. You know, we've got all these shots of them running on together, even if they do look like a dads and lads game between them. You know, it's just, it's so exciting. And I think you can feel that excitement in the crowd. And I think that will continue all season because he's a brilliant player. He's really big, sort of, in every sense of the word, isn't he? Big name, big personality, big, just big. He's about 6'9". He makes everyone look like children. So, yeah, honestly, the reaction in the stadium is brilliant. So hopefully we get more of that. And as we get more people in, the other thing to say is the stadium was quite full on Friday. I think the attendance announced was about 7,000 on the dot, 7,041, I think, from memory. So, you know, it doesn't seem that full, but it felt really full and really good atmosphere. So, it's just another encouraging sign in the sort of in the march up the table, I think, isn't it?
I did want to pick up on the crowd, actually. I was going to ask you right at the end, because you made a point to mention it to us that, you know, the crowd was announced as just over 7,000 people. But obviously, we have to remember this, you know, Sale Club historically struggled to break that sort of 6,000 attendance mark, you know, consistently. But London Irish, not particularly the sexiest name in the Premiership, no disrespect to Irish, you know, Friday night, 8 p.m, admittedly not on TV. But, you know, Alex, 7,000, you know, fans, do you think that's a sign that our recent uptick in form is starting to have an impact on attendances?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think having Faf and lead back helps that as well. I think it's the first time I've heard the attendance announced in the stadium for quite a while. So I'm not sure the significance of that. But from my memory, the last few times I've been. Say again, sorry.
It's always a good sign when the crowd actually gets announced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, there is quite a few, what it felt like, either rugby clubs or schools in. So that, I think that always bumps it up a bit, doesn't it? But, you know, it's the perfect thing to do. Get kids. That's how I got into Sale. I came with a free ticket from school and here I am, you know, 20 years later, still going, season ticket, and there's been ups and downs and we're finally on and up again. I think you are right. You know, it's not the game you would expect to sort of sell out or anything like that. London Irish at home on a Friday night. The access to the stadium feels much better now. I think people are sort of coming around to how to get there and that kind of thing. I still think, you know, when the tram to the Trafford Centre comes, hopefully that'll really help. And we can, there'll be a shuttle bus from the tram to the stadium and you're laughing. That's, you know, that's sort of, it's almost problem solved. It's not quite, but it's much closer than we are at the moment. So I think that helps. And I think the upturn in form has just woken people up to the fact that there's something pretty special going on. And it's when you get to second in the table that people go, oh, maybe we should go down and have a look at Sale, because it looks like they're playing some pretty good stuff. You know, we're getting a few highlights reels onto the Twitter account, onto the Instagram account, that are probably making people come down. So, I think it's massively encouraging. I think it's still, you know, it's still a work in progress and we've still got a lot of work to do, but on field, we're doing all we can. You know, we're playing exciting rugby. We're beating good teams. We've got big name players. So nothing more we can do on field. Off field, as we know, our hands are a little bit tied by the situation we're in. So, you know, I think massively encouraging and just need to keep pushing it. And hopefully that 7,000 becomes kind of like a minimum. Because when you've got 7,000 in the stadium, so I sit in the West Stand, and the stadium looks pretty full. It's only the sort of north stand where it's a little bit empty, but the south stand is always full. The east stand looked pretty much full on Friday night. So it gives a really good image to kind of people saying, you know, we are selling out. We're not an empty stadium anymore. We're getting people in, and it's really encouraging. So hopefully it'll only get better from here, and I'm sure it will. You know, we've got World Cup winners in the squad now. What more reason can you have to come down?
Absolutely. And as we sort of talk about the upturn in performance in the Premiership, obviously we have another aspect, you know, to discuss, and that's obviously the Premiership Rugby Cup. I think that's kind of everything from the London Irish perspective. You know, 25 minutes of Luke Diaga, he looked great. I loved the fans chanting Lude every time he got the ball. The commentator actually had to say on my stream that they're not actually booing, it's saying Lude. I think that's kind of obvious to everyone. But anyway, and obviously, you know, we've got this uptick in form, we've got this uptick in attendance, we're bringing back World Cup winners and world famous names. And obviously now the next piece of the puzzle is a chance at domestic silverware, as Sale's next game actually comes not in the Premiership, but in the Premiership Rugby Cup final at home again against Harlequins. James, you're our resident sort of opposition expert in this instance. And I know you don't want to do a full preview of Quins, but you know, what are your sort of thoughts going into Sunday afternoon's game against Harlequins?
Well, Harlequins have had a bit of a funny season, very inconsistent. They've had a lot of injury problems. They have brought through a few youngsters so far this year that have entered into the first team. You know, I think we can all say that probably Quins are operating with a slightly smaller first team squad, and they have some people on the older end of the spectrum, people like Chris Robshaw, people like Joe Marler, people like Brown. But, you know, really, the few, Danny Kerr is another one who's playing week in, week out, no longer with England. Brown's obviously been out for most of the season injured. But, you know, they've brought in people like Ibba Toya, Caden Murley. They've got Marcus Smith, who probably, I think, on England form, you know, he's quite unfortunate in some ways that you've got Farrell and Ford, who are just in excellent, excellent form as 10s. And that just sort of diminishes the need, really, for another 10 cover, because you know that Slade can always do a job in training or off a bench or whatever. So I think that Quins have had a funny season, but what they are is more difficult to beat than maybe they used to be, because Gustard is, you know, he gets them fired up. He's a good defensive coach. They're probably not as fluent in attack as they have been historically. But when you've got the likes of Danny Kerr at 9 and Marcus Smith at 10, if they can get equality of ball, you know, those two are the types of players that sometimes we struggle against, aren't they? You know, we've always struggled against the Rhinacs of this world, etc. People who've got a low centre of gravity and can change direction and stuff like that, break around the fringes. Because it's more difficult to put dominant tackles on small people. It sounds ridiculous, but you very rarely see Faf get nailed, do you? So I think that that will be a thing. But yeah, I mean, I think that the onus is really on us, really. We're at home, Premiership Cup final, Premiership Rugby Cup final, sorry. And we've got the opportunity to win some silverware. The question is, and this is a question to you guys, Gams, come to Alex first, is how do we balance it in the squad? Because, you know, we've got some World Cup winners returned back from South Africa. England aren't playing next week. We don't know what that means for Tom Curry and Mark Wilson. What do we do in terms of balancing the people who got us to the final versus the people who, you know, coming back from injury and give us the best chance of winning the cup?
Yeah, I think it's just, I think it's a must win. I think, you know, we can't, there's an element of, I suppose the thing that's slightly different this season is that the people who got us to the final, we actually put out pretty strong teams in the group stages, didn't we? On balance, because it was the start of the season and we were almost treating it like a pre-season warm-up. So obviously there's an element that, you know, we didn't have certain players. But I you know, I think the big one, sort of Faf or Will Cliff, I'd be going Will Cliff. I'd be keeping very similar team to the one we chose in the semi-final. And that's probably not that dissimilar to the one we chose at the start of the season. I'd just be going with our sort of strongest 15 from the last couple of weeks, because I think, you know, they're playing well. I think it worked really well with Faf and Lude coming off the bench on Friday night. It just meant we had a massive impact. You know, we could start Lude and you'd be absolutely fine. But I do think, you know, the team that's playing at the moment, people have got to play their way back into that. So I'd be, if you're treating it as a normal game, which I think we should be doing, and playing the settled, strong squad that we've got, you know, Faf, Lude, those kind of people, Tom Curry, Mark Wilson, you know, do they come straight back in? In many cases, no. You know, look at that back row, John O'Ross, Ben Curry, Dan Dupria. They're playing absolutely brilliantly, all of them. So I don't see why you would drop them. Jean-Luc's playing well at second row, as we've mentioned. Bryn Evans and Rob Webber, obviously Evan Stormers. We're rotating the props quite well. And then the back line, you know, I think we played the same back line the last 2 weeks and it looks really settled, really good. And there's probably not a lot of room for manoeuvring that, you know, other than possibly bringing Byron on for someone. But, you know, I would be playing the strongest available squad. But I think currently the strongest available squad is the one that's been playing for the last couple of weeks with that impact off the bench of those quality internationals. Because, you know, then, you know, if it gets down to a tight end of the sort of the game, then we've got that quality in the last 20 minutes that we know is going to see us over the line. So, yeah, I'd almost be tempted to play the same squad as Friday night for Sunday. They'll have had a good rest and go again. But I imagine a lot of people will want to see Fafnir starting, so I do sympathise with that view, I guess. I'll hand over to Lewis.
Well, Lewis, let me put you on the spot a little bit more on this one, right? So Aka van der Merwe and Rohan Jansen van Rensburg are available and fit. Do they come in for the likes of Luke James, the likes of Tom Curtis, and the likes of Curtis Langdon, who have been doing great week to week? And then the second bit is you've got Wilson, Tom Curry, Faf, and Diaga all fit and available. What do you do?
I mean, it's a great position to be in, obviously, you know, embarrassment of riches in a lot of senses. But I agree exactly with Alex. You know, at the moment, what we're seeing in our performances is that consistency of play. And I think part of it is because we're keeping quite a settled squad at the moment. So I think if you're looking to bring these international quality players back in, that's absolutely fine. But I agree with Alex that we should probably just put them on the bench. And then you have this impact and the ability to change the game in, you know, four or five different positions in reserve. If our current team, which remember is second in the Premiership, you know, isn't quite able to get the job done against Quins in the first 60 minutes. So, you know, I think it is probably a little bit harsh on someone like Curtis Langdon, but I think if van der Merwe is fit, you put him in as the replacement hooker. Tom Curtis is an interesting one because van Rensburg is a genuine game changer. And I think there's definitely an argument to be made for him to go in over Luke James. I would keep Luke James in at 12. But then obviously, if you're trying to put van Rensburg on the bench, well, you have to have a backup scrum half. And then you probably need a backup back three player. So that's probably, in this case, McGuigan. So I don't really know whether or not you can actually replace Tom Curtis with van Rensburg, because you probably also need a specialist fly half as well. And so I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but I think there's genuinely a case to keep Curtis on the bench as that specialist 10 who can kick sticks and maybe not play van Rensburg, even if he is available, unless obviously he's 100% raring to go. And then I think you maybe do take him out for Luke James. But we do know that van Rensburg is made of glass, you know, to some extent. And if he's not 100% fit, then he doesn't need to be as part of the 23. Our squad is strong enough that we don't need to rely on those players. We have them as backups, effectively, to turn the game if we want. So I think, obviously, it's a really delicate balance to have. But I think, you know, we saw on Friday against a good team in London Irish, you know, who I think are on a comparable level to Harlequins this season, at least. We've got the quality in our starting 15 as it is to beat these teams. And then we have the likes of Diaga, de Klerk, van Rensburg, van der Merwe, whoever, in sort of reserve in case we do need them as a contingency plan. And I think that's a really, really strong position for us to be in. And is also indicative of the fact that Diamond and the coaching staff are doing a really good job of putting structures and processes in place that put the team first and move away from an over-reliance on star players. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think it's been fitting everybody in. I think one thing I would say is one person I definitely wouldn't consider is Tom Curry, because he played all the World Cup games. He was then quite consistent in our team when he first came back. And we know there's a restriction on the number of games that people can play per year. And we weren't expecting him to be available anyway for the Premiership Rugby Cup final, because we thought he'd be playing in the Six Nations against Italy. So I would take that as one game back for Tom Curry that he can play for the rest of the year that we can choose. And I don't think he's needed if Ben Curry and Mark Wilson are both available, because they can both play seven. We know with Lou Diaga back, that gives us another option with Jean-Luc moving into the back row as well. So I think Tom Curry definitely shouldn't play. I think, you know, I wouldn't bring Akavat back. We sort of brought him back on the bench a couple of times and then he aggravated the same injury. I think it's, you know, it's exactly the sort of competition you want to be exposing people. Like, if Curtis Langdon's going to be our second choice hooker next year, you know, then he needs to be playing in an atmosphere. It's at home. It's a relatively safe environment. I'll be picking him. One player I do expect to miss out, who I think would be unlucky to miss out, is Gus Waugh. You know, he's a young English player. He's been on the fringes of the squad. He's shown up well when he has played. I think with De Klerk back, I think you do have him off the bench because he can change the game. But that would be unfortunate on Gus Waugh. That's why I agree with you that I picked Tom Curtis. Another player that I expect to miss out, which would be very unfortunate indeed, would be Matt Postlethwaite, who I think played really, really well and played either started or was off the bench in all of the previous Premiership Cup group games. So I think he's going to probably miss out, but that would be incredibly unfortunate. I wouldn't begrudge Diamond by putting these guys back into the squad and say, well, you know, you got us here, you go and win us the cup. But I think that it's quite a risky decision, because if you end up winning, then it's like, oh, brilliant, we backed our youngsters, we backed the people who got here, we've given them big game experience. But then if we lose, then it's going to be quite embarrassing because it's a home game. I think if this was an away game at Six Ways, like the last time that we did it, then it maybe give Diamond more confidence to do it. But because it's at home and because it's a cup final, and because it's probably going to be a sellout, I'd imagine, We just have to win, which means that, you know, I think there'll be a couple of these younger lads who miss out, which is a real shame, but understandable.
Yeah, and absolutely. But I think the other thing as well, Postlethwaite, Langdon, etc., they've been able to get some experience in this competition. They've helped us get there. And, you know, moving forward, like you made a good point with Langdon. Well, you know, next year he's going to be our backup hooker probably once Webber leaves. So he'd, by de facto, becomes a part of the Matchday 20 squad for when we're in the Premiership Rugby Cup final next season. Not to get too ahead of myself.
That is very positive. That's excellent.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we just listed off 6 or 7 tier one international players who can't get into our Matchday 23. You know, we've got to go back to back, I think. Right. Obviously, the other aspect of this we should probably mention, as far as we know, Chris Ashton is not eligible to play for Harlequins. Apparently he's cup tied. We still need confirmation on that, but I think it's unlikely that he's likely to play, especially since Quins have sort of suggested that he's also kind of out with a minor injury at the moment as well. So no sort of pantomime villain heroics for Chris Ashton on Sunday. But obviously, you know, we have to reinforce it's a cup final. It kind of feels like phase one, and it's part of this bigger project that the club are building at the moment. And it's going to be, James suggested, probably very close to a sellout. So let's do some predictions. It's the first chance of silverware for Sale since 2013, when they got beat by Quins in this competition's predecessor, the LV Cup, at Six Ways, like James mentioned. Alex, you know, chance at silverware. Do Sale do it?
Oh, I really hope so. Yeah, I think we will. I think it won't be an enjoyable game. I think it'll be pretty tense, but I'm going to say Sale 21, Quin. Oh, no, it's going to be higher scoring than that, isn't it? Sale 28, Quins 22. I think it'll be end-to-end. I think it'll be nervy. I think we'll be 6 points up with the clock dead, and Quins will have an attack, and they'll go 50 metres before we turn it over. Ben Curry turnover on the last minute. That's my very specific prediction. Yeah, it's going to be horrible, but I think we can do it. James, what about you?
Well, I think it's all down to the start we get. If we get a good start, I think we'll win comfortably. Otherwise, I think we're going to start getting nervous and Quins will feel like they've got nothing to lose. I'm going to back the team this week and say it's going to be the former. We're going to get out to a good start and then we'll start playing with our confidence that we've got over the last few weeks. So I'm going to say it'll be Sale 31, Harlequins 17.
Okay. I'm backing the boys. You know, let's get some silverware. Let's make Chris Ashton really regret leaving us for Quins. Sale 36, Quins 14. When we're playing as well as we are, both defensively and going forward, and I think there's very few teams that can stop us, and is to hopefully a trophy lift at the AJ Bell pitch on Sunday afternoon. So that is this week's podcast. Thank you very much for Alex and James for joining me. Thank you to our listeners for listening. You might notice it's slightly more truncated than usual. We have something very exciting that'll be coming out later this week, which is kind of had to be reflected in the length of this week's podcast. But we know that you're really going to enjoy a special edition of the podcast that we've got coming out towards the middle of next week. So that's everything from me. Alex, James, anything from you?
No, that's everything. Just here's to a Prem Rugby Cup trophy sitting in the AJ Bell trophy room in a week's time.
Yeah, and also I'll be at the game on next Sunday. So come and meet people. Well, I don't know if you guys are, but as usual, we'll be in the Sharkey. So come and have a beer with us.
Yeah, I believe we're both there. So, yeah, come and say hello. I think it'll be a very fun afternoon one way or the other.